Yes, and we're celebrating language this morning with my co-host George Stothard, and we're asking you to text in with your favourite word from any given language that you wish. Just let us know what it is and the meaning. We've been talking about how language has amalgamated and how we borrow certain words and phrases from different cultures, different languages. And one example of this, a person that's really depicting this through his writing, is poet Daljit Nagra. Now, if you were at the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature this year, Daljit was here for the first time and totally blew away the audiences with his great poetry. He is British Indian. When I say British Indian, you see, he's second generation. His parents are from the Punjab. They moved to the UK in the 60s. Daljit was born in the UK, grew up in London and a bit of the north of England as well. And what he brings together through his writings is this Punglish, is what he calls it. So I'm going to let Daljit describe his work and also recite one of his poems.
Hello, my name's Daljit Nagra. I'm a poet. My first collection is called Look, We Have Coming to Dover. Or, Look, We Have Coming to Dover. Actually, therein lies the crux of many of the issues of the book. If you laughed at the second version, were you laughing because you think we Indians are all funny when we put on our accents? Perhaps you thought I was being a bit idiotic because I was mimicking Indians. Perhaps you laughed at the first version because I sounded really white and pompous and very severe. These are some of the anxieties I've agonised over in my first collection. And I hope if you read it, you'll kind of understand what it feels like to be a brown-skinned person in a white nation. Many of the poems explore the conflicts experienced by first-generation Indians and second-generation Indians like myself. But the poems aren't just about our relationship to English people. Many of the poems are about first generation's relationship to the second generation. And often, the first generation are talking about their own particular dilemmas, irrespective of the second generation. I've got many characters in the book. Some are older people. There's a widow, there's an elderly man. In the second generation, there's some younger characters. There's a teenage girl. There's a kind of hard, you know, hardened, streetwise guy in one of the poems. So I'm really trying to capture the breadth of feeling and thought in the Indian community, because we aren't a homogenous, singular kind of unit. There are many different attitudes to many different issues. And some of the poems are quite serious and sad and full of pathos and longing, you know, that kind of stuff. And others are just trying to be funny, you know, ha-ha. I'll give you the opening of one of my poems. It's called Sing Song. I run just one of my daddy's shops from 9 o'clock to 9 o'clock, and he want me not to have a break. But when nobody in, I do the lock, because up the stairs is my newly bride. We share in chapati, we share in the chutney.
There's Daljit Nagra, and we'll go now and listen more to Daljit as he recites his poem, Darling and Me.
Daljit Nagra, Darling and Me. The barman's bell done dinging, so I phoned the dimply missus, putting some gas on cooker, bonus pay I bring in. Downing drink, I giddily home for Pakiza 8-track, to which we go-go, tango, for roti to kitchen shiramba. I tell her of poor Jimmy John, in apron his girlfriend she bring to pub, his plate of chicken pie and dry white potato. Like Hilda Ogden, yeah, eat your chuffy dinner. She huffing off the stage as he tinkle his glass of Guinness. We say we could never eat in publicity like that. If we did, wife advertisement may need of solo punch in the smack. I pull her to me, my skating hands on her back, a bolero by Dorval and Dean.
Daljit Nagra there with Punglish, and just a small selection of his poetry. Wonderful, wonderful man, and just fascinating. Just goes to show that idea of, you know, dual culture, culturalism, you know, of somebody growing up where he has parents. I mean, I did a session at the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature with Daljit on identity, and what he was saying was, you know, his parents don't speak English, and he grew up in a English school, obviously, in fact, you know, one of the only few Asians in school, and what that meant, you know, leading this life, this duality that he performed in with his identity, but developing there that very rich poetry, very humorous, very real, but that mixture of language.
It must be very difficult for a young person in that environment where your parents don't speak English, and so you speak in, and for him speaking in Punjab, and then having, going to school and his friends, and growing up as an adolescent and having to almost straddle two different cultures.
So imagine here then, with all the different nationalities, and we are living side by side, how much are we adopting each other's cultures? How much are we adopting each other's language? Maybe not to a great extent, but certainly we're influenced culturally. But I think there is a kind of Dubaian language, don't you? There's an accent, a dialect that's developing here.
I think so. I think, I mean, there's obviously a heavy Lebanese influence in this country, and I have quite a few Lebanese friends, most of whom speak certainly, obviously, Arabic, almost always French, and almost always, you know, English as well. So, you know, they're very lucky, and that's why I said at the beginning of the show that I feel almost cheated by being British. You know, we're not forced to, whereas because of the history and the geopolitics of Lebanon particularly, just because of their history, they've ended up living and coming from a country that have three languages, so they've brought all of that over to this country. And you know, my Lebanese friends will in the same sentence say use words from all of those three languages. And actually happily so do I. I mean, I am not fluent in any other language apart from English. I
know a little bit of Welsh.
No, a little bit of Welsh. A little bit of English. Exactly. Some of my favourite words that I do use here in this country that I've picked up are, I mean, khalas is a fantastic way of saying, okay, you know, enough, let's get on with it, finish, you know, it's just a catch-all.
Move on, yeah.
Yeah, you know, khalas, it's fantastic. So I love it, I use it, it's there, and in the last year it's really become part of my vocab.
Do you use it when you go back to your home country?
I do. I do. And I've got British friends here. I mean, I always use it with my Lebanese and Syrian and Jordanian friends, and even Palestinian friends, actually. And I think they kind of enjoy that. And there are a couple of other words that I use as well. And I do, but I've started using it with my British friends, and here nobody bats an eyelid.
No.
But when I use it on the phone to my brothers, they do think it's odd, and they've never heard the word. But it's fantastic, and I do use Welsh as well, croeso, which means you're welcome, de rien, merci beaucoup. I don't know whether I'm just a bit eccentric, but I really enjoy throwing these in, and I guess maybe because I've got Lebanese friends who also do speak French around me. French has become, I guess, reawakened since I moved to Dubai, which is strange. I mean, an Arabic country, and I'm speaking more French than I ever did in Europe.
So what about the kind of Americanisms that we have here? I mean, you hear children here that have grown up here with an accent that's English, but with an Americanism to it. That's not very grammatically correct, the way I said that sentence. But yes, so that's what I was talking about with regards to the Dubaian language. I think there is a kind of, what I would say, an Americanism to the accent, and maybe the use of words as well.
I'm going to be honest with you here, Suzanne. You know, I'm not sure how I feel about people learning English in an American accent. I'd be honest with you. I mean, nothing against the American accent, but I do feel an emotional attachment to what I view as my language, which is English, but it's not being learnt the way I think is correct. In the, you know, if I can use these words, in the purest way, the way things are spelt. People in this region learn English, and they spell words like theatre. They spell them in the American way. They use the Z or Z rather than the S that we use in many of our words. And yes, why should I be ashamed of that? I have an emotional attachment to that. It is our language, and I can understand why people get emotional about these things. I mean, there are Americanisms that I do enjoy, things like touch base. Is physicality a real word?
Is physicality or physicality?
Physicality, is that a real word? I don't
spell
know.
How?
Physicality.
Yes, it is a word, yeah, physicality.
Okay. Yeah. I thought it was an Americanism.
Oh, no, it's a word. I think if you checked out the Oxford Dictionary, it'll be in there.
Okay. How do you feel about bangs?
bangs, as in the hair.
Yeah, I'd never heard
still
this
don't,
before.
Oh, no, I don't really understand it, no. I have American friends, I go, I've grown bangs. I'm like, what?
I know.
What would we call them, though?
Fringe.
Oh, fringe, that's bangs, is it?
It's a fringe, yeah.
I kind of, all right. Okay.
And what about things like...
Where does that come from, I wonder?
I have no idea.
Interesting you picked out this BBC poll looking at Americanisms and what's bothering people from Britain, British English rather than American English. Because to be fair, there is American English.
Sure, I mean burglarised.
Right. There's no need to be like that about it.
But if you've been burgled, Americans have been burglarized, with a Z, by the way. So is a burglar actually a burglarizer? I don't know.
That's why we love language. Exactly. Well, here, I'm just looking at your poll and some of the words that are getting people's goat or galling them is, can I get her? And it infuriates Steve. He's saying, it's not New York. It's not the 90s. You're not in Central Perk with the rest of friends. Can I get her?
Yeah.
So I don't know. That wouldn't really annoy me, but it's annoying Steve.
I can understand why, because it's incorrect. the question is, may I have?
Mm. Please may I have.
Please may I have. Yeah, absolutely. And I was always told at school, it isn't can I have. Well, of course you can. Just go and get it. But the question is, please may I have. So can I get a donut? Well, yeah, of course.
What else have we got here? We've got 24/7 rather than 24 hours, 7 days a week. Wait on. So when you're not a waiter, once this person read this comment about being in a station waiting on a train, so you're not waiting on something, you're just waiting for it.
Yeah. But there's also, I think, words like, and she was like, and he was like, and I was like, and I find myself doing it, and I can't stop it, and I'm thinking in my head, how can I say this without saying like 15 times?
I know, and it's something I say a lot, and I'm clearly being on the radio, you become very aware of repetition of words, and what I hear a lot of is basically, and then the sentence, basically, then, or obviously, it isn't obvious, but they're words that we put into our phrases, our sentences, almost like prop words.
Yeah.
And I can understand that if English isn't the first language, but it's interesting, it's just repetition.
It is, and I do think it's that.
And they're wasted words. They're not needed.
Like literally.
Oh yeah, that's another one. Literally, this happened. Literally, obviously, this happened, and then literally that happened, and then basically we did this.
I literally exploded with anger. Must have been messy.
Let's look at the messages. Lovely words are coming in. Can we pronounce them though? I wonder. Well, we've got my favourite word. This is from Abdullah saying is Schuttermurg. Schuttermurg, and it's an Urdu word meaning ostrich.
Lovely.
I like that a lot. What else have we got there, George?
We have conversazione, which is Italian for to converse.
Nice.
Here, let's just have a look at that.
And the person goes on to say that, talking about the English, I cringe when British people say, I should have instead of.
Don't quite understand that one. Nakupenda, which is Swahili.
Yes, we did that one. Wonderful. Salam, meaning peace in Arabic, and that's from Salim. Thank you so much for that. Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. Did I say that right?
I think
I did. Yes. They're saying that is the longest word in the English language at an outstanding 34 letters.
And I think that does appear in the dictionary now.
It is. I think it does too. So that outseeds your word, longest word, which was
anti-disestablishmentarianism.
Can you beat that? Can you top that?